A few minutes later, riding double on Renegade, they climbed down off the ridge, heading southeast toward the Muleshoe headquarters. Delinda asked him where he was from. He said Kansas. He told her several more lies in answer to further probing questions about his past.
Your father hires rough men. Does that mean he's a rough man himself?
He felt her shrug behind him.
He settled this country himself, driving a small herd up from Texas just after the war. Only grasshoppers and Indians were here at the time, as he likes to tell it. He fought off the Indians and built his herd and made a lot of money. Not a lot of friends, but a lot of money. He has around 15 men on his roll and a housekeeper.
It must be nice.
Not all that nice. My mother left him and went back east. My brother, a chip off the old block, was killed last year by a gunslick from Nebraska.
A gunslick, eh?
Yes. It was a cold-blooded killing, so father says. He says the gunman shot Vince in the back while he was crossing the street in Julesburg. Father issued a bounty for the man. If I know father, he'll find him. Sooner or later. Someone will tote his head back in a sack, and father will begin sleeping again.
Kuno's gut burned at the lie, but he bit back his exasperation.
I'd imagine having your son shot down for no good reason would tear you up pretty bad.
Yes, if that's what happened. Vince had fewer friends than father, was even better at provoking a fight. After hearing all that, are you sure you want to work for Franklin Evans, Mr. Morgan?
I've worked for tough men before.
Kuno stared hard at the trail ahead, anticipating the moment this lovely girl's father would enter his gun sights. After a while, the trail curved between hills, traversed a narrow stream, and mounted an upward-slanting table peppered with grazing cattle. The ranch headquarters sprawled 1,000 yards ahead, along the lower slopes of a low, sun-seared jog of dun hills with nary a tree in sight.
So, what keeps you here?
Well, I'm only visiting. I left with Mother 3 years ago. I'm currently attending a teaching college in Joliet, Illinois, but I return to the ranch for a few months each year. He is my father, after all. He adores me. I can't turn my back on him.
Blood's thicker than water.
It is at that, Mr. Morgan.
Kyle.
You know what, Kyle?
Delinda leaned forward to regard him wistfully over his shoulder.
I hope he hires you. I think you're nice. We could sure use a nice man around here.
Thank you, ma'am.
Please, call me Delinda.
Kuno watched as the ranch building spread out before him, his stomach muscles tightening and his heart quickening. He feared he was playing into Evans's hands, but he knew of no other way to kill the son of a bitch. And that's what he'd do, even if Evans's gun slicks made him pay with his own life. The Muleshoe compound was like most he'd seen across the west, with a half dozen corrals flanked by haystacks, several stables surrounded with work wagons in various stages of repair, a blacksmith shop puffing sooty black smoke from its tin chimney pipe, and a long low bunkhouse of square-hewn logs and cedar shakes. Horses milled in the corrals and chickens pecked in the yard. The air smelled of coal smoke and manure. Sitting back from the main compound, separated from the other buildings by a good 60 yards, the house was everything Kuno had expected, and more. It was vast and low, built of stone. Tall, arched windows, wrought iron grillwork, and the spacious flagstone terraces surrounding the house added a Spanish flavor. The red tile roofing shimmered in the sun, dropping behind a dark jog of western hills and mesas. As Kuno and the girl rode toward the wrought iron hitch rack, he saw several men gathered before a stable. Most of the cowboys were mounted on quarter horses, outfitted with rifles snugged in saddle boots. Two men were still afoot. All were looking toward Kuno and Delinda. The dog stood near the group, staring at the newcomers with its ears laid back and tail erect.
Delinda!
One of the men began walking toward them. Limped would be a more accurate description. Apparently, the man's left leg would bend only slightly at the knee, so he had to kick it out and swing it around as he stepped forward with his right. He was a burly little terrier in late middle age, wearing baggy trousers, white shirt, and a green duck coat. A long, thin cigar was clamped in one side of his mouth. He had a considerable paunch, and his shoulders sagged. But Kuno sensed he'd been a powerful man at one time. Probably still was. Kuno remembered the grisly scars on Minnie's back. The dog walked beside Evans, fiery eyes pinned on Kuno. The man who'd been standing with Evans walked this way as well, quickly catching up with the short man with no effort at all. This man was tall, slab-chested, and dressed in traditional cowboy garb, with an oiled Colt hanging low on his thigh. His flat-brimmed hat was a tattered, weather-stained Stetson with a concho band. He had black hair, small, shadowy eyes set wide and deep along a broad, scarred nose. A hard case doubling as Evans's segundo, no doubt.
I'm all right, Dad.
Kuno gave the girl a hand down from Renegade's rear.
Where in the blue hell have you been?
Franklin Evans hurried toward her, awkwardly swinging his leg.
Gypsum came home riderless 15 minutes ago, and I've been worried sick. Me and the boys were about to go looking.
The limp took Kuno by surprise. He hadn't heard about that. Somehow he'd pictured Evans as a big, stern man dressed all in black with a silver-plated revolver on his hip and wearing a wide, high-crowned Stetson. Maybe Kuno had just wanted him to be that way, so it would be more satisfying to take the man down. He felt a twinge of disappointment. But the man's diminutive size and limp did not change the fact that he was a venal liar and a cold-blooded killer. It did not change the fact that he would die.
I'm sorry I worried you, Dad. I was riding along Alder Gulch when Gypsum spooked at a snake and threw me. I tumbled down a butte and got stranded on a ledge.
Stranded? You hurt?
I just sprained my wrist. Got a few scrapes and bruises. I'll be fine.
She turned to indicate Kuno, still sitting atop Renegade.
Fortunately, this young man came along and rescued me.
Evans didn't even bother to glance Kuno's way.
Delinda, you have to stop riding off by yourself. If I told you once, I told you 1,000 times, this is no country in which young women can ride off alone and not expect trouble from snakes or fallen rock or cutthroats or Indians. I know you get bored when you're home, but by Ned, you'll just have to limit your prowling to the compound. Is that clear?
Let's talk about that later, shall we? In the meantime, I'd like you to meet the man who saved your daughter's delicate hide.
She turned to Kuno.
Kyle Morgan, meet my father, Franklin Evans.
Gravely self-conscious, wondering if Evans would recognize him from the descriptions he'd no doubt heard in Julesburg, Kuno regarded his nemesis icily behind an innocuous smile.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan, for helping my daughter. I sincerely appreciate that.
I was happy to do it, Mr. Evans.
This is Bram Tuttle.
Delinda nodded to indicate the tall, dark-haired gent beside Evans.
He's Father's Ramrod.
Good to meet you.
Tuttle said nothing, just stood towering over his boss, regarding Kuno flintily. The dog sat between them, eyeing Kuno like a fresh bone.
Mr. Morgan, I am indeed obliged to you for helping my daughter out of a pinch, but I'll also have to ask what you are doing on Mule Shoe Range. My land is strictly forbidden to outsiders.
Dad, I don't...
Hush!
He turned his interrogative gaze back to Kuno, who shrugged and cracked another smile. His right hand was on his knee, but he was ready to slap his gun if the need arose and start firing until the Colt was empty, giving the first 2 shots to old Evans himself, crippled or not.
Looking for a job, Mr. Evans. I thought maybe you'd be hiring for the fall gather.
Dad, I've invited Kyle to stay at the Mule Shoe tonight as a way of repaying him for his assistance. Please give him a chance.
Fidgety, Evans looked at his hard-faced ramrod, then at Delinda. She leveled a beseeching, vaguely chiding gaze at him. Evans furled his brow and chewed his lip.
I won't promise anything, young man, but I guess I owe you a listen.
With that, the old man turned and started dragging his leg to the house.
Come on, devil.
The dog tore its hungry gaze from Kuno and followed Evans to the front portal, leaving Kuno, Delinda, and Brand Tuttle milling in awkward silence. Delinda smiled at Kuno. Brand Tuttle stared up at Kuno coldly. Finally, Tuttle turned to Delinda, cracking a smile that would have looked as natural on a granite mountain wall.
Sure am glad you weren't hurt bad, Miss Delinda.
Tuttle kept his stony gaze on the girl for a full 5 seconds, his lips stretched unnaturally, grinding strange lines around his eyes. Delinda appeared to recoil inwardly, clasping her hands before her.
Thank you, Brand.
She was unable to meet his eyes. Tuttle pinched his hat brim to her and lifted his gaze to Kuno once more.
You can stable your own horse. Be stable, yonder.
He jerked a thumb to indicate a low building on the other side of the blacksmith shed. Then he turned and walked back toward the A stable, before which the ranch hands were unsaddling their horses. Kuno looked at Delinda, who watched the ramrod shamble stiffly across the hard-packed compound. She clasped her shoulders as though chilled. Delinda Evans watched Bran Tuttle disappear into the stable. When she had regained her wits, she turned to Kuno, a straddle renegade, and watching her curiously.
When you've stabled your horse, come back to the house. Father will probably nap until supper time, but I can offer you a cup of fresh, hot coffee in the kitchen.
Fresh hot coffee sounds fine.
She smiled, gave another cool glance at Tuttle's retreating back, then turned for the house. Kuno watched her go, thinking how she belonged here about as much as he did. After Kuno put Renegade into a stall about halfway down, unsaddling him and giving him a good rub down, a shadow moved to Kuno's right and he turned to look. A man stood in the open doorway, silhouetted against the dusky light. A big, broad-shouldered man wearing a flat-brimmed hat. One of the conchos around the crown caught a vagrant shaft of salmon light and flashed.
Hello, pilgrim.
Hidey-ho.
Kuno stood watching Tuttle over the top of the horse stalls, peering around the one horse in his way.
Came to teach you how it is here on the mule shoe.
Thoughtful of you.
Tuttle started down the runway with his swaggering gait, arms hanging straight at his sides, like his hands were weighted down with iron. Kuno dropped the hay he'd been using on Renegade and stepped into the runway. As he spread his feet strategically, the doors behind scraped. Kuno glanced over his shoulder as another silhouetted figure stepped into the stall, paused as he looked around, eyes adjusting, then made his way toward Kuno. He was even taller and broader than Tuttle.
Takes two to teach this lesson, I reckon.
Sometimes, if I want to teach it real good.
Kuno looked first one way, then the other. He hesitated, knowing it would be a mistake to pull his gun.
Grab him, Ham.
Broad, strong hands pinned his arms behind his back. Kuno struggled to free himself to no avail. Tuttle moved up to him and buried his fist deep into Kuno's solar plexus. Kuno felt like a fish flopping around on shore. The pain was excruciating. He felt like he'd been run over by a lumber dray.
That was just to get your attention. Ready to listen?
Kuno's lungs felt shriveled as raisins. His head swam from lack of oxygen.
Good. Lesson numero uno. No one messes with Delinda Evans. Got it? No one. She's mine. Tonight, I so much as see you smile at her across the table, you're a dead man.
Tuttle glanced at the man behind Kuno.
Ham, knock lesson number one home for me, will you?
Ham released Kuno's right hand long enough to jab him hard in the right kidney. Kuno was going down to the floor when Ham caught him with both hands and yanked him up. His entire side burned, but at least he was sucking air.
Lesson numero dos. Mr. Evans probably gonna give you a job, because he can't say no to Mr. Linda. You're gonna have a change of heart. Understand? Tomorrow, you're gonna decide you got the sudden itch to head to Wyoming. And you're gonna ride out of here like a jackass with cans tied to its tail. Understand? I asked if you understood.
Kuno knew he was about to take another lick. He also knew the smartest thing would be to take it and live to fight another day. But that wasn't how he was made. Summoning strength from some reserve, he did the only thing possible at the moment, lifting his right foot and connecting it soundly with Bran Tuttle's oysters. Tuttle bent forward, his face coloring like a Dakota sunset, grabbing his crotch. Meanwhile, Kuno tried again to wrestle out of Ham's grip, but he would have had an easier time trying to free himself from a corn picker. When Tuttle lifted his face, his eyes were wide and glistening, his teeth bared.
Hold him steady, Ham.
Tuttle connected squarely with Kuno's left cheek. His face now sending up a flare of pain to add to the others, he flew back against the blacksmith's leather-covered chest.
Easy, easy. Don't want to mess up his face before supper. Might upset the girl.
Shut up.
Okay.
Tuttle looked at Kuno.
You had enough, pretty boy? Or should I mess up your face so bad Delinda won't recognize you from Adam's off ox?
Kuno tipped his head forward as he hung in the blacksmith's arms. He shook his head.
I've had enough.
There was no point in taking a beating when he didn't need to. Tuttle removed the Colt Frontier from Kuno's holster and wedged it behind his own cartridge belt.
The old man don't allow firearms in the house. You can pick this up from me when you leave, bright and early tomorrow.
He then removed Kuno's rifle from his saddle boot, resting the rifle barrel on his shoulder.
Let him go.
Ham's hands opened. Kuno staggered sideways and grabbed a stanchion, crouching there over his tender belly, massaging the equally tender kidney while blinking against the swelling around his eye.
See you at dinner.
Tuttle and Ham swaggered out the front. Kuno straightened, stretching his back. What bothered him more than his aches and pains was his missing weapons. Without them, he was helpless. Moving into Renegade's stall, he rummaged through his saddlebags until he came up with a spare Smith & Wesson 5-shooter. After checking it for ammo, he lifted his right pants leg, dropped the pocket pistol into his boot, and lowered his denims over the slight bulge. After several minutes of wandering around the high-ceilinged rooms filled with heavy wood furniture, expensive lamps, and occasional game trophies looming from the paneled walls, he found the dining room. A long, dark oak table stretched between a newly laid fire and a giant hearth and a row of tall arched windows, the heavy shutters thrown back to the mild night. The table was set for dining. Succulent, spicy aromas drifted through the cracks around the door that led to the kitchen.
Mr. Linda?
He pushed through the door and stood looking around the kitchen, more vast than most sitting parlors he'd seen. It was equipped with 2 ranges, large as Murphy wagons, and several cabinets and work tables. Delinda sat at the largest table, balling dough into cookies. A gray-haired Chinese man clad in a deer-hide wool-lined vest over a puffy white shirt tended a smoking cast-iron skillet at the range on the opposite end of the room. Delinda, seeing Kuno's face, stopped rolling dough and gazed up at him with alarm.
Oh my God, what happened?
She dropped the dough as she stood and came toward him, her gaze riveted to the swelling around his eye.
Went back to school for a bit. Is that coffee offer still good?
Brand.
He set his hat for you, in case you haven't noticed.
Delinda's jaws tightened and her eyes slitted, her face bleaching with rage. Balling her fists, she moved stiffly to a range where a percolator bubbled, grabbed a china cup off a shelf just above her head, and filled it. Her hair was still damp from a bath. It fell in ringlets to her shoulders. She wore a blue, wasp-waisted dress cut low enough to show the round curves of alabaster breasts. Turning to Kuno, she indicated the table at which she'd been making cookies.
Sit down.
Kuno sat down gingerly, wincing against the pain racking 80% of his body. He'd fought many men for sport back in Nebraska, but none who'd packed a punch like Brand Tuttle's.
I'll get some cold water for that eye.
Forget it. It's gonna swell no matter what.
That man.
Delinda pinched more dough from the main ball, resuming her work.
I take it you're turning away his attentions.
It's not that simple. Dad would like me to marry Brand and settle here, forget about teaching altogether. He'd like for me and Brand to take over the ranch so he can relax and play cards all day in Julesburg. I guess you noticed his leg.
Accident?
3 years ago. A hay wagon slammed into him while the men were putting hay up in the barn. Driver hadn't set the brake and the mule spooked. Shattered the knee. Now arthritis is setting in, adding to the misery. I think it's partly what's making him so mean.
Well, you better keep your feet greased. It don't look like Brand's gonna give up anytime soon.
No, neither is my father.
Delinda set a wad of dough on the cookie sheet. A cloud suddenly passed over her beautiful oval face. She reached across the table, placed both her hands on his arm, and gazed up at him with gravity.
I'm sorry for bringing you here. I was lonely, and I brought you here for my own selfish reasons. I should have discouraged you and sent you on your way. You don't want to work for my father, Kyle. You don't want to work for Brand Tuttle.
Kuno wasn't sure how to answer that. Emotions fought within him, and guilt seemed to be winning. She was a decent, innocent girl, and he was using her hospitality to kill her father. He placed his hand on hers and gazed back at her, deciding a subject change was due.
How's the wrist?
As she gazed at him, her eyes turned from tender to vaguely puzzled. Finally, she took her hands away, leaning slowly back in her chair.
Better. It's 6. Father will be at the table shortly. Would you mind distracting him for a few minutes? It's been a busy day here. Father sent word that we have another guest. Hung had to prepare another chicken.
You bet.
Oh, and Kyle, Brand dines with us.
Thanks for the warning.
Kuno turned and pushed through the door and froze. At the heavy timbered table sat the wizened Evans and Brand Tuttle. To Tuttle's right sat the unexpected guest, a man so large that he made even Tuttle look small. A man with an enormous scarred face covered with a beard that was brown on one cheek, alkali white on the other. From beneath the white beard, a birthmark swirled up into his forehead, ending in an odd pink curl. The man's thick salt and pepper hair lay tangled and matted about his head, showing the creases left by a hat. What the hell was Reuben Pacheca doing here? Kuno's heart drummed. The Rottweiler sitting beside Evans just glared at him. Sitting at the head of the table in a tall back chair, Evans turned to Kuno and lowered a calming hand to the dog's head.
Easy, devil. Mr. Morgan, there you are. Won't you join us?
He turned away and looked back sharply.
Good Lord, what happened to your eye?
Kuno looked at Tuttle, who sat with his hands clasped on the table, a villainous grin pulling at his mouth. His eyes flashed a warning.
Just had a little run-in with a swing door.
Evans followed Kuno's gaze to Tuttle. Evans's own smile grew as the light of realization flickered in his eyes.
I see. You've met Brand.
He shifted his gaze to the giant sitting to Brand Tuttle's right.
Morgan, meet Reuben Pacheca, the best bounty hunter on the frontier. When I heard he was in town, I invited him out here for supper.
Oh.
Kuno pulled out a chair and sat down across from Pacheca.
You favor bounty hunters, do you, Mr. Evans?
Only the best ones, and only since my son was gunned down in cold blood in Julesburg.
Mr. Linda told me about that.
Kuno leaned forward, stretching his right hand across the table at Pacheca, ingratiating himself.
Pleased to meet you. Heard a lot about you.
The giant gave Kuno's hand a jerk and sat back in his chair. His eyes met Kuno's for only a moment, then scuttled away. He was the size of a bear, but his demeanor was more like that of a coyote, wily and shy. He looked about as comfortable in Evans's lodge as would any wild animal, but Kuno didn't think anyone had recognized him. Not yet, anyway.
You mentioned you've been hunting Kuno Massey, for which I'm eternally grateful, I might add. If that is indeed the case, what brought you to Julesburg, if I may ask?
The giant sat stiffly back in his chair, blinking his eyes slowly.
Him.
Him?
Evans glanced at Tuttle, befuddled, then looked back at Pacheca.
You think Kuno Massey is in Julesburg?
He's somewhere around here. I trailed him out of Canyon City over Colorado way. Got waylaid by a couple of bastards who stole my horse when I was having trouble with a tooth. When I finally got my mount back, his trail was cold.
The giant wrinkled his nostrils pridefully.
I cut it again anyway. Wasn't that hard? Sure as shit up a cow's ass, it led right to Julesburg.
Tuttle glanced at his boss, skeptical.
What in the hell would he be doing in Julesburg?
It don't take a fucking pencil pusher to figure it out. He's here looking for you.
The bounty hunter smiled with his eyes at Evans, as though the whole thing delighted him no end. Evans scowled, his craggy cheeks flushing.
For me?
I don't think he's here looking for the Virgin Mary.
Evans glanced around at the windows.
Brand, close the shutters.
Tuttle slid his chair back, stood, drew the shutters closed, and locked them. Evans sat tensely, his square gray head reaching only halfway up the tall chair back, his eyes darting nervously over the covered windows. The room had grown darker, and the candles and lamps flickered. Feeling even more trapped, Kuno wished like hell he had his colt.
Send 5 men to town, Tuttle. Right now, tonight. Tell them not to come back until they have found Massey. Post another 5 men about the grounds at all times between now until Massey's called.
You got it, boss.
Tuttle marched out of the room.
He must be mad!
Evans leaned forward in his chair, planted his elbows on the table, and ran his hands across his face.
Pure mad! What's he gonna do? Ride in here, guns blazing?
Evans turned to the bounty hunter.
Let me make the bounty on that killer's head a little more lucrative. If you can bring me his head in 24 hours, just 24 hours, I'll double it.
Pacheca's lips bunched, the knobs of his scarred cheeks rose, slitting his stony eyes.
That a promise?
You want it in writing?
No, I want it.
Huh?
I want it right here, right now.
Pacheca slid his eyes to the bone china before him.
You can set it right here on this fancy plate.
Evans had no idea what the man was talking about, and his expression said so. Kuno knew, however. Reading Pacheca's eyes, which did not slide to him, he suddenly bolted up in his chair, threw himself to his left, and rolled. Out of the corner of his vision, he saw Pacheca bolt to his feet and lift a sawed-off rifle to his waist. At the same time, Evans's dog flew at Kuno, a black blur. One of Pacheca's slugs tore up the carpet a foot off Kuno's right hip. The second slammed into the dog, which rolled in a dead heap against a sideboard. Rolling off a shoulder and jerking the five-shot Smith & Wesson from his boot, Kuno came to his feet, crouching and turning toward Pacheca. Pacheca tensed and staggered back two steps. Shock and surprise widening his eyes and mouth, he glanced down at his homespun tunic. He dropped the Winchester and clawed at the holes as though they were bramble burrs he could wipe away. Then he staggered back against the curtained windows. Kuno slid his gaze to Evans as Pacheca dropped to his knees, then fell flat on his face. The rancher had stood leaning against the table, staring in shock as Kuno and the bounty hunter had swapped lead. As he met Kuno's gaze, realization suddenly dawned on him. Wild-eyed, he grabbed a slim, serrated knife from beside his plate. Coolly, Kuno leveled the smithy at him. Evans froze and stared at the gun.
I'm Kuno Massey, you son of a bitch. You murdered my wife, made my life a living hell. And I've been waiting a long time for this.
Kuno blew a neat round hole through Evans's throat. The rancher dropped the knife and grabbed his throat with both hands, eyes wide with shock and terror. Then Kuno blew a hole through the rancher's forehead, throwing the man backward off his feet. Spying movement to his right, he turned. Delinda stood before the swinging doors, shuttling a wide-eyed, disbelieving gaze across the smoky room. It caught on her father, lingered there, then turned to Kuno.
I killed your brother because he was about to slit a pleasure girl's throat.
Kuno held the warm pocket pistol down at his side.
Your father's bounty hunters killed my wife.
Delinda stared at him. She swallowed and turned to her father, walking slowly toward him. Tears filled her eyes and slowly spilled over as she stood staring down at him. Delinda turned to Kuno.
Go. Leave before they kill you. There's been enough killing.
He'd seen an outside door in the kitchen, and he moved to it now, stopping at the swing door and glancing back at Delinda Evans, staring down at her dead father.
Just go.
He doubted he'd make it. He had only one bullet left in the S&W, but he had to try. He wanted to live, he realized as he ran into the kitchen, nearly running into the Chinese cook, and opened the outside door. He looked carefully from side to side.
Wait.
He whipped around. Delinda stood in the kitchen. Quickly, she threw an oriental rug back, revealing a trap door with a metal ring. Kneeling, she grabbed the ring and lifted the door.
Hide in the cellar. Hurry, I'll distract them.
Kuno stared at her. The cook stood on the far side of the room, wringing his gnarled hands. Evans's riders were in the house now. Kuno bolted to the rectangular hole and dropped down the short, steep stairs. Crouching on the cellar floor, where the cool air smelled of dirt and potatoes, he looked up at the lighted opening. Delinda eased the door down, sealing the hole in darkness. He blinked his eyes against the fine dust sifting from the rafters. When nearly a minute had passed, the door opened. Kuno blinked his eyes against the sudden light and climbed the five steps to the kitchen. Delinda stood regarding him soberly.
Saddle your horse and get out. Get off the mule shoe and please don't ever come back.
Kuno gazed at her, his heart breaking for her.
Delinda, I'm...
Oh, just go!
She turned her back, covering her face with her hands. Knowing there was nothing more he could say, he turned and left the kitchen, hurrying through the dining room toward the front door. A carved door stood half open at the end of a wide hall, and he made for it. The room had a big oak desk and several leather chairs. A gun rack sporting hunting rifles and shotguns hung to the left of a stucco fireplace. Most of the weapons, including a Maynard Creedmoor, were too fancy for Kuno's purposes. He removed the lowest rifle, a tac-decorated .44-40 Winchester repeater, then rummaged in a cabinet for shells. He found a box with 20 or so shells. They'd have to do. He didn't have time to search for more. Quickly loading the rifle, he dropped the excess shells in his pocket and made for the front door. Outside, he looked around. The bunkhouse walls were lit, but the yard was empty and silent. All the men had headed for the creek. Figuring he had 10 minutes at the most before Evans' men returned, he ran to the stable and wasted no time saddling Renegade. Stowing the Winchester in his saddle boot, he led the horse out the front doors, mounted up, and gigged him toward the entrance gate.
Hey! There he is!
Kuno jerked a look to his right. Coming around the house were the silhouettes of several men.
Shit! Yeah!
Kuno put his head down and heeled Renegade hard through the entrance gate. The horse stretched out, its hooves eating up the ground in a lunging gallop, instinctively knowing they were in trouble. Kuno lowered his head further, the horse's mane whipping his face.
Come on, boy, run like hell!
The horse responded, gobbling up the trail toward Julesburg for a full 20 minutes. When he climbed a low hill, Kuno reined the paint to a badly needed halt. Resting the horse under the star-washed sky, Kuno pricked his ears. He was about to dismount to give the horse some water, but froze, pricking his ears once again. In the eastern distance rose the unmistakable rattle of galloping horses.
Damn.
Kuno's heart was drumming. They couldn't be that close. Evans's riders hadn't had enough time to saddle their horses to be this hot on his trail. But then he remembered that Evans had ordered 5 riders to town, which meant 5 horses had probably already been saddled and ready to go when Pacheca had fired on Kuno. 5 men. The others were no doubt close behind. But if his horse was tired, theirs would be as well. Deciding to try to outrun them, he reined Renegade back toward Julesburg, digging his spurs into the horse's flanks. Tired as he was, Renegade leapt off his back feet, lurching forward in an all-out run. Following the trail, horse and rider traced a winding path across the night-shrouded rolling prairie, curving around buttes, rising over hillocks, and descending into creek bottoms. The cool night air beat against him, making his eyes water. All he heard were Renegade's pounding hooves. He didn't take the time to stop and listen for mule shoe riders. He'd just climbed a ridge on the other side of a creek when the worst happened. Renegade lurched forward and down as his right front hoof plunged into a gopher hole. The horse rolled, throwing Kuno clear. He hit the sage-tufted ground hard, feeling a sharp pain lance his right shoulder. He rolled twice and came to rest on his back, blinking bewilderedly up at the stars, his head swimming. Knowing the mule shoe riders were closing, he pushed himself to his feet. His worst injury seemed to be a bruised shoulder. The leg that had been pierced by Kiowa arrows screamed with pain. Renegade stood to trailside, reins dangling, saddle hanging down his right shoulder. Praying the horse hadn't broken its leg, Kuno bent to probe the hock with his fingers. Already the warm flesh was swelling, but the horse did not react when he dug his fingers in. Probably just a sprain, but when he led the horse in a slow circle and saw the pronounced limp, his stomach sank. Renegade might be led back to town at a slow walk, but he wasn't being ridden anywhere.
Shit!
Beginning to hear the thuds of galloping riders behind him, he led the limping horse 50 yards off the trail, angling back toward the ravine. When he found a game trail, he led the horse down through shrubs to the rocky bottom. He paused behind a cottonwood growing along the trickling stream upon which starlight flickered. While Renegade lowered his head to drink, Kuno shucked Evans's Winchester from the saddle boot, jacked a shell into the chamber, and sidled up to the cottonwood, peering north to where the trail crossed the stream about 50 yards away. Shadows flickered straight downstream, starlight glancing off spurs and gun iron. In the quiet night, Kuno could hear the riders move through the stream and up the opposite bank, heading toward Julesburg. Holding the tack-studded carbine in both sweaty hands, Kuno waited. Finally, more hoofbeats rose in the east, the noise growing in volume until Kuno could tell this was a larger pack than the first, 10 or so riders.
Ruin, you assholes! Could have got more!
He picked out Brand Tuttle's voice as the horses splashed across the stream. A few minutes later, the din was muffled by distance until it faded altogether. The mule shoe men would probably get all the way to town before they realized they were no longer on his trail. It was a fleeting relief. Though he was relatively safe for the moment, he was out here in the middle of nowhere, short on supplies, with a gimpy horse and only about 20 shells for an unfamiliar gun. He slid the carbine into his saddle boot, grabbed the paint's reins, and began leading him downstream between the eroded clay banks. The stream and ravine traced a serpentine cut through the prairie, the canyon sporadically opening and closing, the walls lowering to reveal stars along the horizon, then gradually closing again, blotting out the sky. To cover his trail, Kuno led the limping horse through the water, except where it rippled into deep pools. He walked for a half hour before the canyon widened and filled with pinnacled rock formations. He traced a winding course through the spires, turned down a corridor away from the stream, and found a brushy hollow. He loosened Renegade Cinch, shucked the carbine, and left the horse free to forage on the clumps of brome and needle grasses growing amongst the rocks and along the banks. Kicking Coyote Scat out of the way, he sat down, rested his back against a sandstone wall, and shut his eyes, intending only to doze. When he opened them, wan morning sunlight angled over the shaded eastern walls. Kuno blinked, his heart thudding. He'd heard something. A shadow moved along the wall before him and to the right. A second later, a man appeared. Short, round-faced, wearing a dirty gray Stetson. Another man appeared beside him. They were both holding Winchesters across their chests. Seeing Kuno, the man in the dirty Stetson stopped suddenly, eyes widening in shock.
There he is!
As the man lowered his Winchester, Kuno raised his own carbine. The shot took the gunman in the knee and he dropped. As the second man fell lifeless to the ground, Kuno took aim at the knee-shot man again. The carbine's bullet took him through the back of his neck. Kuno's heart did somersaults as he pressed his back against the sandstone wall and pushed himself to his feet. Suddenly, gunfire rose from the direction of the stream. Confused, Kuno remained crouching, fingering the carbine's trigger, shuttling his gaze from the corridor leading up from the stream to the ridges above, watching for mule shoe men. They didn't come. Instead, he heard the clatter and pops of pistol and rifle fire as though a small war were being waged in the main canyon. Finally, Kuno straightened and walked toward the stream, keeping his rifle up close to his chest, apprehension pushing at him hard. When he rounded a curve, the main sunlit canyon opened before him, shrouded in dust and gun smoke. A horse wheeled, buck kicking, throwing its rider off its right rear hip and galloping south along the stream. In the horse's wake lay a half dozen men, strewn as though dumped from a fast-moving wagon, twisted this way and that, hatless, inert, some lying spread-eagled over brush tufts. One man crouched behind a boulder on one knee. Winchester aimed at the ridge, smoke and flames geysering from the barrel as it bucked. Kuno lifted his eyes to the ridge on the other side of the stream. Behind rocks and low shrubs, more smoke puffed as the gunman there returned fire on the man crouched behind the boulder in the canyon. Kuno's eyes creased as he shuttled his gaze from the ridge to the boulder and back again. What in blue blazes was going on?
Shit!
Then the rifle clicked empty for the man behind the boulder. He turned his back to the rock and dropped to his butt, facing Kuno. Kuno saw the big, flat face of Brand Tuttle, blood streaming from a bullet burn on his left temple. His eyes locking on Kuno's, Tuttle's face bunched with surprise. Bunching his lips angrily, he dropped his carbine and clawed his Colt from his holster. Kuno took his time, knowing he at last had the upper hand. He raised the carbine to his shoulder, a smile creasing his lips, and stared down the barrel.
See ya in hell, Brand.
Kuno's slug tore through the man's mouth and out the back of his head. Kuno lowered the carbine and lifted his puzzled gaze to the ridge. Smoke wafted, a haze before his eyes, curling up along the canyon walls, lit by the climbing sun. A figure rose from behind one of the rocks on the ridge. A slender woman's figure in men's clothes, complete with curl-brimmed hat, holding a rifle across her chest. Marlene. Four more figures rose up from rocks and shrubs, all wielding rifles. Three women and a boy wearing a bullet-crowned farm hat. Minnie, Glory, Frida, and Sandy. The boy waved. Kuno shook his head, doffed his hat, and ran a sleeve across his forehead.
I'll be damned.
Kuno, the girls, and Sandy headed back to Julesburg, where Kuno holed up on Roderick's third floor, waiting for Renegade to recuperate. He was careful not to show himself on the streets. News of his fight with the Mule Shoe Riders had spread like wildfire, and he feared some would-be gunslick might try to make a name for himself. One week later, when Renegade was given a clean bill of health by a knowing liveryman, Kuno and Renegade left Julesburg at dawn. He rode Renegade up a low ridge overlooking the town and reined the horse to a halt. He studied the main thoroughfare, upon which the supply wagons and Conestogas of westering dreamers were already stirring, bullwhackers maligning their teams. He registered little of it, however. He was thinking about Marlene. He'd said goodbye to her the day after the shootout, when she'd left town and ridden west along the South Platte. She'd intended to look up her aunt in Denver and settle down. Kuno felt a pang in his gut, remembering her flashing, cat-like eyes, the feel of her soft lips against his when they'd parted for the last time.
You could always ride with me to Denver. We could even, get hitched if you wanted.
Kuno had only smiled at her. Deep down, they'd both know they'd gone as far as they could together. Her eyes tearing, she threw her arms around his neck and kissed him, then wheeled, mounted her horse, and rode away. He'd watched her weave amongst the other riders and wagons until she disappeared among the river trees. Kuno glanced southward, turning his thoughts to Sandy. The boy was gone now, too. He'd been taken in by a childless farm couple from south of Julesburg. His and Kuno's parting had been as hard as Kuno's and Marlene's had been. The farm couple, Josiah and Laura Adamson, were good, God-fearing people. They'd shower the boy with love and give him a solid home. Kuno had promised to write and to visit whenever he could. Still, remembering the boy riding off in the battered old farm wagon, legs hanging over the end of the box, he felt a pang of loneliness. The hollow loneliness was relieved when he turned his thoughts to the girls on Roderick's third floor. Last night, they'd turned away their other customers, gathered in his room, and given him a parting gift he wouldn't soon forget. One, in fact, he'd probably remember on his deathbed. He could still smell the girls' perfume, feel their tender nibbles, feel a pair of soft, supple breasts in his hands, while another caressed his back. Thank God for all of them and Marlene and Sandy. He owed his life to every one of them. It had been Marlene's idea to ride out to the Mule Shoe and check on him. On the trail from town, they'd spied Renegade grazing along the creek and backtracked Kuno, approaching the ravine just as the Mule Shoe riders were about to fill him with daylight. Pinking the Mule Shoe riders in that canyon had been like plucking ducks off a pond. Those whom the girls and Sandy hadn't killed had fled, deciding that since the boss was dead, there was little point in them ending up that way as well. Kuno's eyes lifted over the town's salmon-washed rooftops, his smile fading now as his thoughts turned to his own future. Where he would go, what he would do now that Evans was dead and he was no longer a hunted man, he had no idea. Not in the long run, anyway. For the moment, he intended to ride east and visit the homestead he'd only just finished building when the bounty hunters had attacked. He'd kneel at July's grave and assure her that the man responsible for her murder was dead at last. He remembered his father and his stepmother, butchered by Rolf Anderson and Sammy Spoon back in Nebraska. He'd killed Anderson and Spoon on the Bozeman Trail, but his vengeance quest had only just begun. Well, it was over now. His loved ones had been avenged, the bounty hunters were off his trail, and there was nothing for him to do now but find a quiet place to settle down and begin living again. Reining Renegade off the ridge, he gigged the skewbald paint eastward, jogging along the trail over which thousands of emigrants continued traveling west. Another line of canvas-topped wagons appeared beneath the horizon, a vague outline against the climbing sun. Meadowlarks flitted over the weeds, waving along the trail, the birds' yellow breasts flashing against the sear brown of the semi-arid desert. In the distance, shadowy copper rimrocks humped, mysterious and hopeful. The sun warming his face, Kuno leaned forward to give Renegade's neck an encouraging pat, then settled back in his saddle. He wasn't sure what his future held. Nonetheless, he felt at ease for the first time in a long while. He and Renegade rode toward the dawn of a new day. .45 Caliber III Manhunt is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2013 by Peter Brandvold. Published by arrangement with Peter Brandvold. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2017, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication is prohibited. Performed by Terrence Aselford as narrator, Alejandro Ruiz as Kuno Massey, Kimberly Gilbert as Marlene Stratton, Scott McCormick as Ruben Pacheca, Laura C. Harris as Delinda Evans, Andy Brownstein as Franklin Evans, Peter Holdway as Doc Romer, and Maggie Donnelly as Sandy, with Stephen Carpenter, Chris Gennebach, Yasmin Toison, Christopher Walker, Brian Hemmingson, Christopher Sheeran, Kenyatta Rogers, Tracy Oliveira, James Lewis, Jillian Levine Sisson, Nick DePinto, Michael John Casey, Bradley Smith, Danny Gavigan, Richard Rowan, Eva Wilhelm, Evan Casey, Danny Stoller, Eric Messner, Ken Jackson, and Eric Singdalson. Adapted for Graphic Audio and directed by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed .45 Caliber III Manhunt, be sure to look for the Yakima Henry series by Frank Leslie. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts.
Holt Corrigan is your brother, I take it.
Yeah, haven't seen him for a long time.
Heard he was in a gunfight in Amarillo. Got himself killed.
Heard that too.
He would have been involved in every bank holdup in three states if you believed everything you hear.
Help the little lady up and apologize.
Or what?
Yes, it involves lead.
There'll be another time.
Anytime you want to die.
Two men are out there. Just rode up. One's an Oriental, the other's white. I think he's only got one arm.
Sounds like my brother, Blue Corrigan. Lost his left arm in the war.
You still preaching?
I help with services in town from time to time.
Touch my family, and you will die a horrible death.
And that's Silka with Blue. Silka's our partner. Nakashima Silka is his full name.
You must be calm. The trick is to unbalance the opponent.
There's another story about you. 2 years ago in Austin, the way I heard it, three fellas were leaving the bank after robbing it and ran into you. You took down the first gunman with only your hands while he was pointing a six gun at your belly. In a split second, you grabbed the gun, killed the second outlaw, wounded the third. Heard that story all over Texas. Thought it was crazy talk. Until I saw you in action today. Now I've got a hunch it was true.
Are you D. Corrigan?
I am. Want to make something of it?
Hell no!
I'm not interested in going against D. Corrigan. You know that.
Well, neither am I, Aegon.
What are we gonna do?
We're going in.
This is a setup, Blue. You know that.
Of course it is. But I don't see any other way.
How about using our guns?
The Corrigan Brothers.
Available now in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for,
go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can select from over 900 titles and 60 series in either CD or high-quality download formats. If you would like to listen to an entire series, you can conveniently purchase the whole sets on CD or USB flash drive from graphicaudio.net. At graphicaudio.net, you can now earn loyalty rewards points, redeemable toward future online purchases. You can also get full mobile downloads directly to your phone or tablet with our new Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices, so you can listen on the go, anytime, anywhere. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our email newsletter, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter.